My Taste with Bibendum Wine, supplier to the UK's top restaurants and bars.
Hello, this is Nigel Williams and welcome to our programme where we're hoping to enhance your enjoyment of food and drink through the knowledge and experience of our studio guests. In My Taste, we're speaking to chefs, restaurant owners and wine experts about their success stories, personal preferences and perhaps revealing a few trade secrets along the way. Today I'm speaking to restaurant owner and wine expert Xavier Rousset, a master sommelier at the age of just 23. He now boasts a Michelin star restaurant, Texture, and 2850 Wine Workshop and Kitchen, which has three branches in central London. Xavier, welcome. I guess the fact that jumps out at us there is master sommelier at just the age of 23. How did you manage that?
Well, I mean, I got hooked on wine at the age of 16, let's say. I went to a winery once and I wanted to understand more how it works. So at the age of 16, I started reading about wine. Then at the age of 18, I went to the restaurant to work, then a sommelier school for a year. And you know, 18, 19, I was spending potentially 2 hours a day studying about wine.
Yeah.
So for like 3 or 4 years, every single day, studying, reading and tasting. So
I'm thinking from a 16-year-old's point of view, you know, you're a teenager, it's a very grown-up thing to be having an alcoholic drink. But you seem to be taking it a step further. You wanted to know why these wines tasted differently. I believe that on that first occasion, there were two different wines from that same, vineyard, and you thought,
yeah,
wine was different.
One was very, you know, red in color, ruby kind of color. The other one was tawny color. And they were coming from the same vineyard. And I was in the winery looking at the window. And the guy said, okay, on the left is the left vineyard, the left glass, right vineyard, right glass.
Yeah.
And you're looking at 10 meters apart, you know, why?
Yeah.
Why? And I'm very confused. And I thought, okay, I'm going to read, understand, and so on and so forth. So I got hooked. But the wine was always on the table. You know, in France, Italy, or the Latin country, there's always wine, lunch, and dinner on the table.
Well,
so I was allowed to have a little taste at the age of 13.
Watered down?
No.
No? Just a little.
No, you don't water it down, you put less. You don't drink that much. You know, at 13 or 14, I was not drinking. I was just tasting, sipping. And every occasion, a family occasion, a glass, a little bit of champagne, try this, try that. So it was part of the culture.
We'll come back to a little bit more of your story, success story, in a second. But just that idea of tasting there, you obviously started this at a young age. But do you think developing a palate is something that anyone can do, or do you have to have it in your DNA? Do you have to be born with it?
It's a big question. I mean, I believe you need to work it. Because 16, I knew nothing, and I developed the palate. Now, let's say if you spend a week with us in a restaurant, and we taste 20 or 30 wines a day, after 1 week, you start to understand a bit more. And then if I take you to a vineyard and we only taste Riesling for a week, then you understand Riesling.
Yes.
Or Shiraz or Syrah and so on. So, you know, anything between 2,000 to 3,000 wine a year I taste. So when you do that, you know, you pick up quite quickly.
Now, this will be one for people listening in the fact that wine experts can quite often go off into their own little world of speaking of nuances of flavours, and the words get very technical.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily agree with that. Would you say 9 or 10 words you use to describe the flavour of a wine?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very personal thing. At the end of the day, it's your enjoyment. That's what you prefer. That's what you like. And if it tastes of licorice or strawberries or cherries, it's not very relevant as long as you enjoy drinking it, if that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
It's the best sign of quality for a wine is the bottle that goes quickly, as opposed to the length of the tasting note.
Yes, yeah, indeed. So when you're with other wine experts speaking about it, I guess you have the technical language you use between the two of you so that you understand what the other person is saying.
Yeah.
That's an accepted language, but you don't necessarily have to use that to the wider general public.
No, I mean, there's no point to try to confuse people by looking clever, being technical about it, because it's so easy. I get confused a lot with things I don't understand, computer, cars, engine and stuff. So, you know, if you try to show off, you can speak your language, I won't pick a word, doesn't make you better for it, you know.
Let's go back to your career, because one of the famous restaurants you worked at was La Manoir or Quatre Saisons. How did you end up there?
Wow. I used to be in Bristol for Hotel du Vin chain at the time, and one of the sommeliers, or the top senior sommelier for the group, used to be the head sommelier Le Manoir. And he contacted me because he knew I wanted to move on from where I was. And he said, oh, look, Raymond is looking for a head sommelier at Le Manoir. Mm-hmm. So I applied for the job, not thinking I would get it. And I ended up being at Le Manoir after that, yeah.
Were you interviewed by Raymond Blanc?
No. The restaurant director. Then actually, Raymond very quickly, when I joined, wanted to see me in his office.
Yes.
And we had a chat, and then I stayed there for 3 years. He helped us a lot after that. He's still helping us a lot.
Yes.
He's.
And during this time, this is where you met your partner, where you set up Texture, which is now your Michelin star restaurant. That's How right. did that association happen?
Well, I mean, my business partner, Agui, was the head chef of Le Manoir. I was the head sommelier. And there was one day he said, oh, what are you doing next week? Let's have dinner in London. There's a new restaurant open. So we ended up having dinner, the two of us talking. It's a restaurant called The Ledbury, just open at the time. Mm-hmm. And we were talking and talking. What do you want to do next? What do I want to do next? And we both realized it's opening a restaurant. So we then say, oh, it'd be nice to have strength on the wine level and the kitchen level. So yes. that's how it started.
So for Texture, what were your unique selling point that you were setting out with there?
Well, we wanted a fine dining because it still is very much fine dining, but to be more relaxed, approachable. We don't have tablecloth. We got music. There's a bar. So very easygoing to an extent where, again, people associate fine food or establishment like Michelin star level to be quite stiff and, you can't really talk too loud. You can't have a good time. Which is totally the opposite. That's we're trying to do something else. Yeah.
And with your French upbringing, you knew about that formality of dining. So you go to a 3-star Michelin restaurant in France, it's going to be very stiff.
Yes. And it's not necessarily what I like, to be honest. And less and less. And you'll find that even in France, it's changing. Yeah. Even in France.
So with your staff, you allowed them to not be quite so formal, and it grew up from there and a big success. So how long was the restaurant open before you gained your star?
About 3 years.
And
only got a Michelin star, 3 years, back in 2010, I think.
Now, tell me about the concept of 2850, because this really appeals to me, because I love a glass of wine, and I like to eat. If I'm drinking, I like to eat, but not necessarily have 2 hours to spend on a meal. So did you start with this?
Well, the whole idea started with a customer Texture for Christmas a few years back. And he said, I've got too many wines in my cellar. I've got 10,000 bottles. So it's a lot of wine. And he said, I'll never be able to drink it all. Why don't you put some on your list? And then when it sells, you pay me. We agree on a price and so on. So we started, I called him back. I said, I think there's a restaurant in here because I like the idea a lot. Why don't we get a few collectors to put their wine on the list? And then we build from there. So we started having a fine wine list at a very good price. Mm-hmm. And then French food tag along, and also another list of 15 white, 15 red by the glass, mm-hmm. all available by small measures, carafe, bottle, and it started from there.
So this worked like on a sale or return basis?
Consignment type.
Yeah. So that was gave you a business advantage there.
Yeah, because also we didn't hold the stock, and fine ones can be expensive. So we thought, if we don't hold the stock, we put small margin on. If it sells, perfect. If it doesn't, mm-hmm. so be it.
So which was your first 2850?
A Fetterlane in the city.
And was it an instant success?
Yes, actually. for a basement, we were worried because it's a basement restaurant. It's not easy to make it work. And the last two or three restaurants before failed.
Yes.
So we were a bit worried. Mm. But we didn't realize that there's a lot of lawyers, a lot of banking in the area, and they're quite keen on their wine. So they came quite quickly to check us out, and they liked us a lot. So we're 4.5 years on now.
And word of mouth, and you've expanded to 3 branches altogether now.
Yeah, Marylebone and Mayfair. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to go further? National? International?
No. No, one step at a time. It's so easy to get carried away and open in order to close quicker than makes sense, because the quicker you open, the likeliness that you're going to close down quickly as well. We want to build it to be strong each step, and then move on to the next one, potentially, yeah.
Okay. I think you've been criticised for stacking the bottles of wine up in the bar itself, because that's not the ideal storage conditions.
No, yeah, but those wines tend to go quite quickly. The fine wine are all temperature control, but those wines for the everyday sort of consumption, they are in a...
Yeah, Why put it away? Because it's going to be open soon.
A month, if not 2 weeks. Yeah.
Okay, let's take you on to some of your personal favourites, Xavier, because it's going to be nice to get a look into where the restaurateur eats out and the kind of things they eat and drink. So, close to you, I'm assuming that you're a Londoner, so yeah. Where do you tend to dine on a regular basis?
Well, I love Medlar restaurant, which is in King's Road. And Medlar, well, it's a local restaurant. They do very honest food, very good quality food. The wine is stunning. The service is second to none. So it's not formal. They make you feel welcome. So I really like that.
You already mentioned that you don't like things to be too formal, but if it's a special occasion, a birthday or something of the family, or maybe you've got a new client that you really want to impress, where would you go?
Outside London or in London?
Either.
Well, Le Manoir, we go back to Le Manoir Quatre Saisons, obviously, because not only I'm biased, but it is a very special place.
Can you always get a table, though?
maybe. maybe I can. But it's a busy place. It's stunning. Even when I was working there at the time, you know, you realize how lucky you are, because the whole environment is a special environment, full stop. But in London, I love Pied-à-Terre as a special occasion. The Ledbury also is one of my favorites. We are spoiled in London. There's a lot of places.
Yeah, there is. Tell me about what you would like to order. You know, maybe you have a favorite dish if you went into any of those restaurants. When you see it on your menu, you go, I'm not going to waste my time. That's the one I'm having.
I love, it's quite trendy at the moment, it's ceviche, which is then cooked in with lime and a bit spicy sometimes. But I love the freshness of that. Mm-hmm. So it's cooked in, basically it's raw fish cooked in the lime juice. And red onion and so on and so forth. But I really like that. I love the freshness of it, with a glass of Riesling.
Ever do it for yourself at home?
Yeah.
A lot? Yeah. You cook a lot at home?
Not too much, because I'm usually out quite a bit working or sometimes entertaining. But so I cook, once or twice a week, no more.
Looking at your career, you're a busy guy. You know, you've got four restaurants there. Is there a plan for the future, or are you just going to stick with this for the time being?
No, I mean, we're always looking at how to develop and 2050 and texture. But first, it's consolidation and then development. But yes, there will be potentially things moving up in the next year or so, for sure.
Can I take you on to wine, because this is your real area of expertise? What are your advice to somebody like myself, you know, knows a little bit, and you're going into the restaurant and you think, okay, I know what my favorites are here, but there's this huge list. How do I make my choice?
You know, a big wine list, even I get very confused. I tend to ask, because usually big wine list, there's always someone in the room who will know about the wine. So the best thing is ask the sommelier or whoever's in charge of the wine. Just say, okay, this is what I love. I love such grape. Quietly, you can give a rough idea of the budget and then do your best. And you'll find that we take great care and we're proud to show you the best we can for what you want. Mm-hmm. So those are the best tips,
One of the concerns, I think, for a customer would be going, okay, if I ask the expert, he's going to want to upsell me. And that's going to embarrass me when I have to say no.
Yeah, we got a reputation to use to do that. It's changing. But also by giving an indication of value, what you from this to there, and don't go above it. And if they do go above it, just bring them back down.
Yeah.
And more, you'll find that the new generation, it's not like that anymore.
Now, I believe you dislike Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes.
Isn't that that's the trendy grape at the minute, though?
Well, it was trendy. It still is kind of trendy. But as soon as we put Sauvignon Blanc on the list, it tends to fly. But on a personal level, I find it a bit boring at times.
So that must be hard to taste as an expert. You know, you got to check it out for your business.
Yeah, no.
And you're there, Sauvignon.
Yeah, I still manage to recognize what's good to not so good Sauvignon Blanc. And actually, every now and again, I drink Sauvignon Blanc, at a nice level, mm-hmm. but it's not something I would definitely go after every day. No.
Okay, so Xavier, what do you have at home as your general drinking wine? You know, the one. I'll just have a glass of that.
Grüner Veltliner from Austria is lovely, fresh, easygoing. So a nice glass as aperitif. I'm a big fan of Syrah from the Rhône or even elsewhere. Pinot Noir, also Pinot Noir is very trendy, but it's also so easy drinking and soft and very friendly grape variety. That is.
I did see 2850, there was a tweet, I think, that you put out where you'd got a vintage bottle of Madeira wine.
Yeah.
And what was it? It was really old, wasn't
1864,
it?
1864,
was it?
1864. Yeah.
Quite, yeah. So did you really sell that by the glass?
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. 1898, actually. We just got at the moment a texture, 1864 by the glass, but we did 1898 at 2850 Fetterlane and then 1900 because we sold that in 1898. Then we went on to 1900.
How much was that a glass?
£100 plus.
Right, okay.
But, I mean, it's a lot of money. Yeah, of course. But you think you're drinking something that's it's only once in your life and that's it.
Yeah.
1898 Madeira. Yeah.
How did that make you feel when you tasted that? Because
very young.
It was a glass of history, though.
No, it was a glass of history, for sure. I mean, it's not every day you come across those sort of wines. And Madeira, I'm a big fan of Madeira. Mm-hmm. They can age forever. And the proof was this 1898 was outstanding. Mm. Outstanding.
We're going to do a little bit of tasting with you now, Xavier. So let's get the glasses together.
Right.
And we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
My taste with Bibendum Wine.
Xavier, I'm going to get you to be the wine expert for us now. And just to prove that you really did, you really can do it for us. We've brought in a port just for something a little different. In fact, Bibendum Wines have given us the Quinta de Velado 10-year-old Tawny to taste. Right. Do you like port?
Yeah, I like port. I mean, it's very, this country, France, consumes the most port in the world.
Really?
Export, yeah, but it's all low quality port. And I really discovered high quality port in England because obviously there's a massive relationship. Mm. You know, there's a lot of English names, Grahams, Taylors.
Yeah.
So the influence of the English are very, very prominent in Portugal or in the Douro Valley. But no, I like it. And it's obviously highly established, still slightly underrated somehow.
Yeah, there seems to be certainly a tradition in this country of one you think of when you say port, you think of grandfather with a handlebar moustache and sitting in the corner of a leather chair. Bring out the port.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not like that at all. It can be, the variety seems to be incredible, doesn't it?
Yeah, the variety from a Tawny to a vintage port, you've got Coleta, you've got Ruby port, all sorts of things. And to me, especially the Tawny we're having now, it's very, very food friendly.
Mm.
Very much. It's not just about cheese. The port has got a lot more to offer than cheese.
All right, let's open this and see what we've got. That's incredible, actually, because just pulling the cork there, the room is full.
It's aromatic, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Very aromatic. And I mean, we are now entering the winter. For me, those sort of wine or port are very wintry. It's a lovely glass of wine in the winter. That specific Tawny, I would definitely match it with a... I was lucky to be in Portugal not long ago and to have a Tawny port with a fig tart from
yes.
the estate. Yeah,
I can imagine
figs.
That. Yeah.
Outstanding. You can't beat that. The simplicity makes the complexity.
Tasting a port, same as tasting any wine in terms of technique, looking at the colour?
Looking at the colour, the nose, obviously. Now, it's fortified, so they add alcohol to make the port. So it's going to be, there's still some sweetness and slightly higher alcohol level than a normal wine, let's say.
Yes.
But the technique is still the same.
Okay. So what can we smell? What are we smelling here?
I love the it's rancio type, the licorice, the plums, prunes. And also, don't forget, it's a Tawny port. So you spend a lot of time in oak. It's a 10-year-old, which is not the minimum age. It's more of a kind of average or style. So it's spend a lot of time in oak, loses a lot of color. Therefore, the Tawny color comes in. And I love the fig notes as well. It's quite complex. It's one of those ports that are definitely served slightly chilled. You don't want to serve a vintage port too chilled. But a Tawny port can really do that because they lose all the tannins. So chilled is better.
What would you be serving this with?
Well, the classic in this country with cheese, obviously. And, you know, I don't always understand port and cheese on a personal level. I don't know if it's being French or not. But fig tart, dessert, lovely. That, to me, is also fantastic with coffee, cigar and Tawny port.
Okay.
How about that?
I'm thinking maybe a sticky toffee pudding.
A sticky toffee pudding, yeah, that will do the trick.
Okay.
It's not going to be losing calorie on that, but that's for sure.
That's right. Well, fortunately, this program is not about saving calories.
Yeah, yeah. It's not diet.
It's all about the flavor. Absolute pleasure talking to you, Xavier. Please do come back and see us.
I will.
I'll be coming in for a glass of something nice soon.
Well, thank you very much. I hope to see you then soon at the restaurant.
My Taste with Bibendum Wine. Find out more about the flavours you like and discover something new by downloading Bibendum's free app. Search Plonk in your app store.